You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
Welcome to The Dan Nichols Show, where my guest this week arrives in a cloud of nostalgia. Because when I was young, he was one of my all-time heroes. He's still regarded as Zimbabwe's greatest ever all-rounder. I think I had a poster of him up on my bedroom wall as a kid. He's not going to like this because it makes him sound 100 years older than me. He certainly isn't. He was known for being a great cricketer, having fabulous hair, and being a proper Zimbabwean folk hero. And now he's on the Dan Nichols Show. Guy Whittle, welcome.
Hey, Dan. Thanks very much for having me. Been a hell of a long time since the days of following cricket in Zim, and been watching you on your show quite often. So, hey, nice to be here.
Well, that gives me goosebumps, because genuinely, when I was a young cricketer playing club cricket in Zimbabwe, in Marandera, Guy Whittle was who I wanted to be. So this is really exciting to have you on the show, and very glad that you are still here and able to be with us, because if we go back, I think about a year or so, it's not unsurprising for sports people after their careers to get into the odd skirmish, but not many of them get into fights with leopards.
Yeah, it's actually just over a year ago that took place. I was called up by, well, not unfortunately, when someone wounds a leopard or something like that, I was the other PH in the area, so I went down there to help them.
So that's professional hunter, and that's your career now.
Yeah, so obviously after my cricket, I went into professional hunting. And I've operated in both Zimbabwe and Mozambique. And just on this particular day, we had clients in the North Camp and the South Camp. I just finished in the North, got a message that there was a leopard wounded and if I could be there in the morning. So following a leopard is it's always going to be a difficult one. You know that they can come out of nowhere. So I decided best to take my two dogs with me. They're my attack dogs. I just feel like, you know, they're Belgian Malinois. The one is a tracking dog. They had lost sign that lost tracks that night. They lost blood that night following it. So it's always good to follow a cat at night using lights because you get the reflection, the eyes reflecting. And if you do get a growl at something, at least it can't charge the light. So it's always something that people do practice at night. A lot safer than during the day. Anyway, I decided to take the dogs down the next morning. We went down there. They had not gone much further than where they were that evening. And we waited about 20 minutes, half an hour, just to let them carry on. There was no luck. And I just had a pup, Malinois. He was only a year and a half at that time. So I just said to the handler, I said, just have a look and see what you can pick up. And the dog just went in total opposite direction to where the rest of the trackers were going, and he got about 50 or 60 meters away from me, and I said, shit, I better go and see what's up, you know. And the dog was just going, so I raced up there. The dog's on a leash, so the dog's about 15 meters ahead, 20 meters ahead, and the leash, every time you want him to slow down, you just put your foot on the leash and that just slows him down. And the handler had said, look, I can't see a track and I can't see blood, but he's going on something. So I said, okay, well, let's just go, you know. Anyway, we went over the saddle of a hill, went down. So it was just him and I at that time, which is not the smartest thing to do. But at the same time, there was no blood or anything, but we just wanted to find if that was the case.
So but you do know there's a wounded leopard out there somewhere.
Yeah, no, we did. So we went over the saddle of the hill and I started getting uncomfortable. And then we saw some scat and where it had scratched, but there was no blood. And we were just about to turn back. And I said, well, let's just go around. Just let the dog carry on a bit and we'll meet up with the other guys on the other side. And after seeing that scat and that, we thought, well, maybe it was before the cat had come in. And that's what the dog had seen. So we sort of all relaxed a bit and we'd gone another maybe 20 meters. And all hell broke loose. Leopard growled at us, and dog came back very quickly, and then we went and had a look at that patch, and there was a little bit of blood. So we called the guys in, the guys came across, and we said, look, this is your cat. The other PH had came in, a well-renowned PH, a guy called Brent Hine. And he came in and the tracker's gone on the track and the dog and the other and the handler, who's a young handler, no experience at all, he was out in the front with the one dog. And my little bitch, also Malinois, she's more an attack dog. So she stayed at the back just with the other handler. And I raced up ahead and said, hey, you got to slow down. You can't go on this on your own. So we waited for the other guys to get closer. Anyway, cut a long story short, the handler was a bit far ahead of us and starting to go into some thick scrub mapani, and I told him, hey, just wait. And I turned and I said to the other handler, I said, let Eva go, the attack dog, just let her go. Because now we're going into some thick stuff and the dogs would be able to just stir up a hornet's nest there and maybe flush it. And that didn't happen. Didn't flush. Well, it did flush, but what happened was we always left an opening in front of us and the other PH was behind me. And that was a mistake on my behalf. I should have been side by side with him. But at that time, I was just too nervous. My dogs were too far ahead. The handler was too far ahead. And just things happened too quickly. And what happened was my dog, the bitch, went straight in, Eva went straight in, and the leopard just started growling, roaring, everything. The tracker came out, the handler came out of there extremely quickly. Obviously, I went down onto my knee and just to get down low, because to face a charge, you want to be eye level with the cat. And with that, the cat came out, the dog came out, and out came the leopard onto the dog, and I fired, and didn't make contact. And with that, it just turned, and it was just like that. And I managed to, when you're on your haunches like that, I managed to get my rifle up in front of me, and with that, I ducked my head at the last second, and that was the cat. They obviously launched into me. The jaw and his teeth took the barrel of the rifle, took the barrel, and with that, the barrel hit me here, but then the claws got me on top of the head and opened me up all down the back, and then the other claw got on hold of my arm and obviously opened me up there, and then it went straight over the top of me. Somersaulted straight over the top of me, and then I just quickly turned and, shit, here comes round two. And it just, from then on, it just seemed to happen in slow motion. I can still remember it. Cats started coming, and that growling. And I didn't know what to do. I mean, just that fraction, it's just everything seems to go slowly. And with that, the dog, this little pup, came in a year and a half, just ran in there and launched itself onto the cat, onto its side here. Hey, that bought me time. I was jumping up. I jumped up to my feet, tried to go for, to reload, etc. And with that, and you're just waiting for the other PH, hey, just shoot someone, shoot this bloody thing, anyway, the other PH was right there, but it all seemed to take forever. And he shot the cat, we thought he had shot the dog, but he shot it straight between the shoulders, and we thought the dog might have been hit, but it was just the leopard had grabbed its back leg and bitten that and broken it. It just, obviously, I got back, I was back up on my feet, and then I'll never forget my tracker, late tracker, he died a few months later, a great man, and then he started howling. Yeah, because he saw all the blood and how my head had been opened up. And we're some ways from the vehicle. And this PH, old Brent, he's quite a big fella, hey? So we grabbed his shirt, which is lots of, and we put that around my head. And got some water and Coke and just managed to keep myself rehydrated to get back to the vehicle. And fortunately, there was another PH in the area. He had a client that was a doc. And he put he got some antibiotics into me and just cleaned me up and told me, yeah, get to hospital as quickly as you can. And Brent took me straight to hospital from there. So Yeah.
Did you think it was all over?
What?
When the leopard attacked you?
It's amazing at that time. A lot goes through your mind. You said, "Geez, you know, it's like, you know, how do I react?" And the only thing I could do was to. It happens too fast. The actual attack is not in slow motion because it's so fast. I mean, that is incredibly quick. And, you know, because it came out of the brush, it came out of there so much lower than I thought it was. And it's quick. I think I just shot over the top. And it saw that movement and it was on me in a flash. So go back to your question. Just that section was too fast, but when it went over the top of me and waiting for that round two, that was in slow motion. Quite a few things went through my mind, yeah.
that's a pretty special dog you have.
Yeah, I know. His name's Chikara. He's done amazingly well on his tracking. He's does all our anti-poaching and that sort of, not all of it, but he's just his presence when you go into communities chasing poachers and stuff like that. A lot of people have learned not to run. There's no violence. So he's been incredible. Same with Ever. Ever's been incredible for us. They're great, great dogs.
It is an extraordinary story, and I'm very glad you made it through. Mostly because otherwise I wouldn't have this week's episode, which would have been annoying. I know you, of course, as a great cricketer, and I wonder, seeing that, experiencing that, how did that compare with what I would imagine have been a, if not terrifying, then slightly unsettling experience as a cricketer of having Wassim Akram from one end and Waqar Yunus from the other?
Yeah, no, I'll never forget our tours there, going to Pakistan, where we'd always heard about how dead the tracks were and that kind of thing. We got there and it was like a lawn. It was green. And with those two firing up, it was a pretty awesome experience. One, to be part of it was pretty special. But knowing that one was going to try and hit you on the inner thigh and the ribs or on the head, and the other one was going to hit you on the toe or on the head, you know. I remember we had like, we went and got Mark Decker and I, we had no chest guards or anything like that. So we went and got these hockey pads, chest pads, and we cut them and shaped them and we were like duct taped up before we went to bat. It was crazy. That was on our first tour. I mean, we were just used to, other than Edo, there was no one really quick around, you know. So, and I guess when you come from a little small country and a small club environment to going to play that international, you're just trying to prepare yourself for the fight, you know. So it was just a great privilege to be able to play against those the likes of that. I'll never forget a story of when we went out the first test that we played, Mark Decker and. Grant Flower went out to bat, and Grant's always, you know, Grant's like always with a chirp here and there. Anyway, they go out to bat, and as they leave the changing room, Mark Decker says, "Hey, good luck." Grant says, "Yeah, same to you. I hope you get hit on the head." Well, they go out onto the pitch, and about the fourth ball, I think it was, Grant gets hit on the head. And those days were all about Matabeleland, Mashonaland, you know. Well, one Billy at the other end, he wouldn't go and help with Shona Mach, you know. So old Grant was lying there on the floor and trying to get some sort of sympathy. The only sympathy he got was from the bowler and the Pakistan team. Old Mark Decker was sitting at the other end and says, "Well, I hope you get hit again." That was a sort of banter in those days, you know. That's what it was all about. But yeah, that was, they were quick. And they were there to get wickets, but it was just amazing to be out there and to, from our sort of environment, and going out there to play against them.
It was a very exciting time for Zimbabwean cricket, because from being a kind of fringe member of the cricket community in many ways to all of a sudden playing these test matches, coming up against the best in the world, proving yourself. You got a 100 in your sixth test. You got a Zimbabwe's first ever double 100. You were suddenly playing cricket at the very highest level for a country who not that long ago had not been at that table at all.
Yeah, it was, thanks, very, a big thank you to the guys before us, the Zimbabwe Cricket Union, and, you know, the guys are like John Drykos, Pycroft and Houghton and all those guys, Doug Lillett, Doug Almond-Brown, all those guys who had really traveled, put their jobs on the line for us to make that sort of passage. When we came and when I started playing and when I left school, they were pretty close to it. But I think 92, we eventually got the test status. So those guys had all really just done the groundwork and sacrificed a lot from their work and everything just to make cricket great in Zimbabwe, you know, and to lead to the next, evolve into the next, into test cricket.
Was there a sense of this is almost something of a dream and that in such a short space of time, suddenly Zimbabwe was part of the top deck of world cricket and you were very much part of that?
It was, you know what was so good about that is that we really struggled in the early 90s, you know, when we got in there, we sort of were trying to find our feet and a guy called Bob Wilmer came in, I think it was Dave Houghton invited Bob Wilmer to come in and come and give us some advice. And you know, it's always good to bring other coaches in. I think that's what the world in rugby and cricket, they bring people in to come and help and sort of inspire people and encourage people and to work on each other's games. And in those days, you just had a coach and you had the same voice over and over again. So we sort of evolved from sort of John Hampshire from just gutsing it out where anything outside the off stump, you left it, anything straight, you scored runs off. And if you try to play anything with a bit of flair, you know, he'd walk down the pitch there and give you hell. And that was the discipline. So it built that sort of discipline from just keeping it as simple as possible. And the same with bowling. You know, it was either on the off stump or outside. And if you did bear down the leg side, well, then he'd walk down there and give you hell. So I wasn't much of a bowler in those days, in the early days. So I think just from listening to John Hampshire, he sort of... I love competition, getting guys out. I wasn't really a bowler. But then he just channeled that energy into that sort of thing. So evolving from that sort of strict discipline to what Bob Wilmer came to us and trying to open up the game. And I guess we were just so structured and trying to, I guess, win ball by ball. But, you know, to put a score on the board and then whatever happens, to now going out there to win the game, to win the sessions, to win overs, to, you know, win ball by ball, to over, to session by session. And then that sort of built the confidence within to really, to up our game, you know, and it gave us a bit of freedom to play, you know, as opposed to building an innings.
You were able to do that not just because of some terrific coaches, but you had some great cricketers. I think of Andy Flower, who coached me for many years, now a great coach in his own right. You mentioned Davy Houghton, Grant Flower playing with you, Alistair Campbell. There's some incredible cricketers. And then there was, for me, one of the all-time great fast bowlers who is sadly no longer with us. And there was a lot of tragedy in his later years. I know he was a very good friend of yours. And I remember him particularly because when you guys came to play rugby against my high school and you were a few years older, I think his thigh was the size of my shoulders.
He's a beast.
And you guys are both part of that Falcon back line. And that was the great Heath streak.
Yeah. No, all streaky. We were very lucky as we, you know, just... Streaky was always the backbone. You know, Edo was there in the early days, and then he carried Edo. Streaky was the backbone of our bowling, our quick bowling attack. And you know, he was a calming influence. So he brought on players like Pommy, Brian Strang, and Henry Olonga. You know, and really, you know, just try to channel energies into doing the right things. So yeah, he was the backbone of our bowling attack, and then obviously later on in his years he really matured as a batsman and was incredible. You know, just developed himself into one of the best all-rounders of his era, you know, so it was pretty awesome. Going on to all the other players, I just think, you know, we were a nice little team, but then when the other two guys that came in was Neil Johnson and Murray Goodwin, and what was so good about that is that there were two more players that managed to help us take the innings deeper, so we became better chasers and we became better, you know, we could set totals and be more aggressive about our play. So yeah, it was a nice team that came together pretty well in the end.
It was a wonderful era for cricket for Zimbabwe, and very fond memories of watching you guys play and doing as well as you did. At times thereafter weren't always that great, but I see at the moment a lot more promise, a lot more excitement, the potential for a lot more. Is that a sense that you share?
We're currently, look, it's at the end of the day, we've got what's happening now is in the past 10 years or so, I don't think we've played much cricket. Now we're getting tests. I think we're playing more tests than any other country in the world at the moment. So that gets you, that gets the exposure, that gets the guys out there, and they're going to go through some ups and downs, and you need to do that. Okay. You need to have that. You need to go through that. And what they've also done is they've got a bit of experience with a bit of youth, and they've got to try and amalgamate, put those two together and try and get some more players back to build the depth. And once that, you know, it just reminds me, once they can do that and then try and get the country behind them, and I think it'll only go from strength to strength. But there is a hell of a lot of talk about it at the moment. I think they've had some great success, and you just need those successes and a few more to go along with it to be able to get the country behind you.
And that lifts a country, and now called South Africa home, we see the same thing. Sport lifts the country whenever we have success.
Yes, very much so, yeah.
And it speaks to the broader success of a country, and what we've seen being here on Fothergill Island over the last few days is just the beauty and the serenity and the wonder of Zimbabwe, and it's the part of the world that you are now so much a part of as a professional hunter, having moved into this space post-cricket. I wonder, when you are doing what you do now, waiting for hours, doing the job that you do, if there is a link between the skill set you have now and the skill set required to score a double hundred in a test match, have that patience, have that sort of concentration.
Oh, big time, eh? Just being patient with people, being patient, and being able to manage people. You know, people just don't realize when you're in that cricket team and that cricket environment, and you know, you've always got people that are better than you in different skill sets. So when you leave that team environment, you're all about trying to build a team together. So when you're managing out there, and like managing a team of professional hunters or a team of a management team within the concessions, etc., it's all about just trying to bring everyone together and getting the best out of them. So definitely what I learned from the cricket has definitely come on from there.
In terms of where we find ourselves today, which is Fothergill Island on Lake Kariba, the beauty has blown everybody in my travelling group away, and it's a wonderful advertisement for all that is good about Zimbabwe. And the headlines for Zimbabwe have not always been good over the last number of years, and we know that, we understand that. But this is one of those counterpoints. This is something that says this is such an incredible country.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, over the last 20 years, Zimbabwe's been up against it in the media and sort of everything, wherever you turn. And I just think that the people are a hell of a resilient. They're just incredible people. It's the most well-educated country in Africa. They know what their assets are valued at. And they've managed to keep a lot of it still going, you know, through everything against them. So, yeah, I mean, look at Kariba here. You've got all these lodges that have taken place here on Kariba. There's flights going. Everyone's, you know, MacAir have got flights going back and forth from Victoria Falls. And, yeah, it's just incredible. The whole Zambezi Valley now, you can go and catch a tiger just pretty much anywhere now. There's so many lodges and that. So, but, yeah, very privileged to still have these amazing resorts. New resorts and the parks system all still holding together.
It speaks to hopefully a bright future for Zimbabwe. I want to end though on a little bit more of the past, and I've already spoken of just how much of a Guy Whittle fan I am. Not the only one in my family, as I told you over lunch earlier. My sister Kira, I think, still has Guy Whittle t-shirts at home, to her husband's dismay. You were a massive star for so many of us growing up, and you had this incredible cricket career. There was the first double hundred for Zimbabwe, there was that hundred against Pakistan that was so key to a victory. But when you look back on this cricket career of yours, what for you is the very best memory?
Oh, I think there was a couple of very special memories. One was the series win against England in Zimbabwe. And just obviously it was here, so the whole country was here, so it was just amazing to be part of that. And then one of the other victories that we had was the World Cup win in England, I mean in England against South Africa, and then going to South Africa and beating South Africa in South Africa was also pretty awesome. So I think from a team event, those were very, very special wins. A number of other wins that took place, but those are just like a couple of the wins that really, you know, to try and beat South Africa, you know, and South Africa was unbelievable in those days with Jonty, Lance, Alan, they were just an incredible side. You know, the late Hansi Khonya, who to me was one of the greatest leaders of all time. It was just incredible. So, I think those were just being able to beat Hansi and beat the South Africa was quite special there.
Special memories for you, special memories for so many of us who watched the Zimbabwe team through the years. It's been a great pleasure to be able to catch up with you and to have you on the show. My eyes lit up when I spotted Guy Whittle wandering across the lodge we happened to be sharing. So thank you for that. And my only request is I'd love to have you back on the show. So if you can, just not fight any leopards in the foreseeable future, just to make sure that you're good to go for our next encounter.
No, thanks very much, mate. Awesome, Dan.
There we go.
Great to catch up. But
a very special guest on the Dan Nicholl Show. The man a year ago was fighting leopards, because that's what you do when you're Guy Whittle. The leopard came off second best, as did so many attacks around the world. One of Zimbabwe's great cricketers and a very, very special guest on the show this week. Zimbabwe's greatest ever all-rounder, Guy Whittle.
You're listening to The Dan Nicholl Show.